Welcome to Real Romance, courtesy of the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Real Romance. My name is Robert, also known as Bamfing Bob, and here with me as always is my lovely wife, Brittany.
Hello.
We really need to pre-record that, because I say it that way every single time. I don't change it up at all.
No.
I'm like a broken record.
That's okay.
You love me anyway? Okay, don't answer that. So this time around, this is episode 19 of Real Romance, which means we only have a couple more left in 2020. And this is going to cover all the movies we watched in the month of October. October is notoriously the horror month.
So there was a lot of scary stuff.
Yeah, pretty much every single thing on our list has some element of horror or suspense. So let's just jump right into it, right? There's not a whole lot to talk about otherwise.
The first movie we're going to talk about is a movie called Antebellum. And basically, the plot of the movie is that you see this lady on a slave plantation.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, well, it's in olden times, but then it keeps flashing
right.
back.
It's a period piece.
It flashes back to her time in modern days. And you're like, well, did she get, you know, kidnapped out of time? What's going on? But It's actually, should I ruin it? I mean, it's not that.
We don't want to ruin too much, but in the trailer, it kind of shows like back and forth between a modern day and an old time. And I really did think it was kind of like a reality flip. In her mind, she was switching between the 1800s and the 2000s.
Personally, I don't think they hid that very well, that it was just a slave plantation hidden somewhere. I have a strong opinion that I think that they maybe should have put the slave plantation on like an island somewhere. They hid it in like the deep south somewhere, and I don't think that's possible.
No, okay. So in the story, it is essentially a slavery story. There's a plantation, there's a lot of Civil War soldiers who've kind of invaded this area, and they say we have to take quarter on these plantations and your slaves are going to take care of us. It flashes back to her life in the modern times, and the main character, played by Janelle Monáe, She is very much an empowerment guru, right? She's a strong black woman, she's written books, she leads political movements.
Correct.
She's very much influential and rich. And so when they decide to kidnap her for this Civil War experiment, when really it's just forced slavery, right? It's abduction and slavery.
I mean, these are basically just racist Proud Boys. I mean...
Yeah, with a lot of money and resources dedicated to abducting and enslaving black folks.
You ever seen the movie Hostel, where they pay a lot of money to murder someone? Well, it's pretty much the same concept, only instead of murdering, it's having a slave.
It's living out your Confederacy
dreams.
Wet dream. Yeah. And so it's really much a power move for them to kidnap Janelle's character. What's her name?
Eden.
It's really a power move when they get Eden off the streets, because in the real world, they're probably like, oh my god, she's missing, what are we going to do? And on this plantation, they just get to treat her like any other slave.
I'd like to say that I would believe something like this couldn't happen in modern day.
But
I just don't. I think that things like this might happen all the time. I think there are places where you can go, and if you pay enough money, you can treat people like slaves.
Well, there's a lot of shit that people don't talk about, right? It's like child trafficking and, you know, sex rings and things like that. They happen. You just don't really think about it because it's not always at the forefront of the news unless there's a big, you know, police raid or something.
Rich people like to cover that stuff up. Even if they weren't directly involved, if they knew the person, they're like, well, I don't want this to come back on me. So just money makes things go away.
So I'd like to tell you about a friend named Jeffrey Epstein. And he was a bad dude.
The whole thing is so shady because in present day, when there are stuff like that, it's hard to tell what's real facts and what's propaganda. There's so much propaganda on the internet that's just like, well, these people were on the list and these people did it. And like, but you don't know that. Like,
right.
And it's hard to be like, well, yes, I should hate this person because they are probably involved in a child or slave sex ring. But I don't know. It's just...
Right. It's just all corruption and everyone is guilty all the time.
I 100% hate rich people. I just do. I mean, I mostly hate poor people too. So it's not like
solely... If you won the lottery, you wouldn't donate it all to the poor. But you also wouldn't like...
No, I wouldn't go out and be like, I'm going to buy 6 gold boats. Like,
they would sink.
Quite honestly, if I won the lottery, I would take care of my family and us. And then I would put the money aside so that my kids would have a safety net to fall on. But I ain't just handing them the money either. They gotta work for their money, just like I did. Be poor, just like I did. I very much believe in the fact that everyone should be poor for at least a year of their life.
Yeah, I think financial insecurity builds a lot of character, but consistent financial insecurity just makes people, like, die inside. So in the story, it feels like a Jordan Peele type movie. Right.
I really thought he directed this movie.
No, it is definitely aimed toward a black audience. Feeds into those base fears of, you know, things are fine, or not fine. Let me rephrase that. Things are way better than they were 150 years ago. At the same time, like, there's stories about slavery. There are ancestries. It's kind of terrifying thinking about, well, what if I was in that situation? How would I cope under this, you know, slave master rule with no power and constant beatings and torture, all sorts of terrible shit. And this movie really dives into it. It doesn't shy away from sexual assault. It doesn't shy away from torture and beatings and killings of the slaves and how shitty all the conservative Civil War leaders are.
I feel like this movie was kind of confusing in that I wish it had held more back. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wish that instead of giving it away right away, that she was kidnapped. Because, I mean, it doesn't say that, but it pretty much leads you to believe that she was taken.
Yeah.
I think it should have held more back and made it seem more like she was taken out of time. Make it seem more creepy. There was not enough mystery in this movie, in my opinion. I mean, I liked it, but
Because it starts in the quote-unquote past, right? It starts on the plantation. And there's a lot of little things that kind of hint that she was somebody or that this is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't say it outright. And then as soon as it does that flashback to the present, to the modern real world, then it kind of puts everything in place. And that switch happens maybe 35 minutes in? 40? Tops?
Yeah. I just feel like the producers, like, they had a really great idea, and I feel like it could have been executed better, in my opinion. I liked the movie, don't get me wrong. It wasn't as compelling as I wanted it to be, especially with a star like Janelle Monáe, like, leading this. I wanted it to be something more. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
This was, as far as I can tell, a fairly low-budget movie, because there's not a whole lot of special effects involved. But there is a component of, you know, indie filmmaking. It was going to come out in theaters, but because of the whole pandemic thing, it got pushed to, what was it, direct on demand for, like, Amazon or something?
Yeah, something like that.
I forget where we watched it.
It was on Amazon.
Yeah. We both really enjoyed this movie. I felt like it wasn't a pure horror. It wasn't scary enough. But it did kind of get your emotions going.
I just feel like I got a different movie than what I saw in the trailer. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. We got, like, a thriller drama period piece when I was kind of expecting more of a time travel, almost sci-fi aspect.
The direction they went in with the slavery aspects, it was almost like they were just trying to shock and awe people with, like, oh, look what these horrible people are doing, rather than actually embody the feeling of what it must have been like to be enslaved to someone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just feel like there was more to be had here, and I don't know. I felt a little empty after the end of the movie. How would you want to rate it? How would you rate it?
It's a solid flick. I'd give it a 3.5.
I would give it a 3.
Okay.
Because I liked it, but it was a little bit boring and frustrating.
Next on the list is a movie that we saw on Netflix, and even though it came out in September, we didn't get around to watching it until after the last podcast. It was called The Devil All the Time. It's a Netflix film, and it spans over, you know, a couple of decades. The main story is of Tom Holland's character.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how Stephen King, there's a lot of things that happen in this strange town, mm-hmm. and everything kind of seems off? Well, this is that kind of town.
I mean, there's two towns, but they connect.
Right. I think it might be Georgia.
Confirmed. You think everything's in Georgia.
Well, everything is in Georgia.
You know, you thought Lovecraft County was in Georgia, but you know they live in Chicago, right?
Oh, shit. Yeah? For real?
Ohio.
That's in Ohio?
Bro.
Shut the fuck up.
Hey, it's a split between Ohio and West Virginia.
Okay, so West Virginia. All right, so it's set in West Virginia.
And Ohio.
And
things happen in both towns.
Okay. It's set in the 50s, I want to say?
It's during World War II.
Okay.
So it starts kind of in the 40s and then
it kind of kicks forward to the 50s. So the main character, played by Tom Holland. He lives in this town, and his dad was really abusive. He ends up living with his aunt or grandmother.
Yeah.
And their young... It was an adoptive sister.
Correct.
Right? She was abandoned at the house.
What?
And they lived together.
No, you have to start... You're skipping too far.
No, okay.
There was a preacher.
The one thing about this movie is there is a lot of moving parts happening in this movie.
There was a preacher going on, and he married this lady, and they had a baby, and he's like, we're going to go on a drive. Can you watch our kid? And so they watched the daughter, and then
They never came back.
Neither of them came back. They just kept her. And then it, like, skips forward to the 60s when most of the rest of the story takes place.
Yeah.
So, basically, Tom Holland is a teenager now. So, when he was younger, his mom died of cancer, and his dad, who was abusive, killed himself.
Yeah.
So, he has a lot of issues.
No, he had,
that.
like a pray and log out in the forest, and he would constantly, like... pray to God, and the dad sacrificed Tom Holland's dog.
So sad.
To try to save the mom. What when she dies, it's like, wow. Now mom and the fucking dog are dead, and so he ends up killing himself.
Some of the other moving parts are that we find out the preacher killed Tom Holland's adoptive sister's mom. The preacher never came back because there's a pair of serial killers. Just wandering around, just killing people, and mm-hmm. they killed the preacher.
No, and it's an interesting... They're dating each other, kind of like Bonnie and Clyde, but rather than, like, robbing banks and things, the lady actually, like, lures men in, like, mm-hmm. travelers. Mostly people who are coming back from the war, going to the army base. She would lure them in, seduce them to have sex with them, while the father, who's supposed to be acting like a voyeur, is, like, taking photos of them have sex. And then they continue to take pictures of him getting murdered.
Right.
And so it's just leaving a trail of these young boys' bodies in their week. And it's also, like, sexually charged, too.
Yeah, kind of like there's this real-life serial killer. I think the Henleys
okay.
is what their name was.
Yeah, I you are the serial killer expert. I am just an observer.
Basically, what kicks off the final... starts to kick off the final story of the movie is Robert Pattinson moves in as the new preacher in this town.
Yeah, and he's like a real fire and brimstone preacher from the South.
And he's a real dick.
No, he comes across as,
no,
as kind of a smooth talker.
Because the grandma makes this really nice, like, food for him, and he tastes it, and he's like, that's disgusting. He was like, I'll eat the bad part so that nobody else has to eat it. Like, she is so hurt feeling.
Yeah.
So it immediately starts off with Tom Holland's character.
He's like pissed off at Rob Pattinson's preacher.
Yeah.
Character. And by the way, his accent is so weird. Like, I'm not going to say bad.
No, it's not bad. It's just weird.
It's not something that I would have chosen.
But I kind of think it probably is a West Virginia accent.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird coming out of his mouth.
There's a lot of stars in this movie. So, like we've mentioned, those two, and then Harry Mellon was the original preacher, Dudley. Bill Skarsgård.
And doesn't he, like, get bit by a snake being like, I'm cured? Like, because he's, like, scared
yeah.
of snakes. And then the snake bites him and he ends up dying from the fucking venom.
No.
Stupid.
That's not what happened. He's killed by the serial killer couple. I just told that earlier in the story.
Oh, wait. He survives the venom, doesn't he? I got that. We're good. Go on.
Bill Skarsgård was, like, the dad.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastian Stan is the corrupt sheriff. I mean, and there's... I don't know how to say her name. Mia Wask... I don't know. She was Alice in Wonderland. I mean, there's a bunch of other people, too. Basically, Tom's sister...
the adoptive one.
She gets seduced by the preacher, and he's like, it's God's will, even though she's literally, like, 16.
Yeah, it's like you're one of God's creatures in God's body. Let me observe God's creation. And he ends up, like, seducing and raping her.
Right.
But because she's a minor, it's like, you know, at the time, it's like, oh, you know, we're in love and stuff. But he is absolutely a predator. 100%.
And she gets pregnant, and he's like, well, it can't be mine. We're just doing God's work. We're not having sex. And then she goes to hang herself, and she decides to change her mind, but the bucket falls, and she dies.
Right, so she has second thoughts, and it goes from a suicide attempt to an accident.
And that just breaks Tom's character's heart. Like,
And
he was a good kid. He's trying so hard to do the right thing.
But he also does have a violent streak thanks to his dad. He doesn't take shit from people, so he'll get beaten up and then he'll, go out of his way to...
get retribution.
Yeah.
But not for himself.
In his own way, right.
Usually only for others. He kills the preacher.
Yeah. Because he stalks him for a while, finds out that he's actually, like...
doing it to another girl.
Yeah, and so he's like, hey, what about this girl? I heard you were going out to the fields and giving her lessons and things.
Yeah.
And ends up shooting him, and so he's on a manhunt. And that corrupt cop, played by Sebastian Stan, ends up, like, following him, too.
It doesn't end well for anyone.
And meanwhile, the serial killers are still on about, and that goes fun. I think Tom Holland gets tied up with them at some point.
Yeah, right at the end, as he's running away, it's just really sad. Like, there's a whole thing with him and the sheriff, and everything ends so poorly, and then, I mean, that's pretty much it.
Now, what did you think of the film, now that we've kind of gone over what it's about?
There was a lot. It was about 2 hours and 18 minutes. I mean, so about 2:15.
And I think they could have whittled off about 30 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And told the exact same story.
Everyone does a fantastic job. I have no doubt that these people are going to be nominated for awards next season. They do a great job. And it's really just all about corruption. And everyone's corrupt except for this poor kid who's trying so hard to be good. And it just sucks for him. Like, he's in a poor situation. There's nothing he can do to make his situation better. Yeah. Not really.
And so he murders people.
I don't really think he does murder people.
Well, he kills
the preacher was going to kill him.
Even if it's self-defense, he does kill him.
There were several people that were going to kill him.
Right, so I think his body count by the end is like 4, right? He kills the preacher, then the 2 serial killers.
And then the sheriff.
And then the sheriff.
Let me tell you, Tom's character is the only character you're going to like in this movie. Everyone else is garbage.
Pretty much everybody.
I mean, they're interesting.
Like the mom.
Yeah, she's dead, though.
Yeah, but she's not bad.
No, but she's dead.
Wait, no, his adoptive mom?
Oh, I thought you meant his main mom.
Not his real mom, the one that actually raised him.
Yeah, but they're in it very minorly.
Yeah.
It's just all the main characters are evil, and they all do really bad stuff. I mean, that's why it's called Devil All the Time.
Right, but it revolves around old-timey music, the lighting, or rather the color scheme is very old-fashioned. There's not a lot of brightness. It's very dull and subdued. Speech patterns in it, you kind of have to follow along real close because it's not modern speech. So really, it's more difficult.
I mean, I really liked the film. I just was a little bored. There were parts I was like, okay.
Come on, hurry this shit up.
Hurry this part. Like,
yeah.
I want to get... Like, there were definitely really interesting parts. Quite honestly, I wanted to spend more time with the serial killers and the sheriff. Because the one serial killer, the lady in the couple, is the sheriff's sister.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a more interesting dynamic than some of the other stuff we spent, like...
Especially since he, like, found photos and was, like, actually starting to dive in. And then it falls off the rails and they don't really talk about it.
Because then he had to hide it because he was afraid people were going to accuse him and, like... He just didn't know what to do. Remember, he like burned this evidence. And I think that was a more interesting dynamic that we could have shortened some of the other time and spent more time with them. But I understand that Tom's character is the main character.
I don't think this was a high budget film either.
Fun fact, Chris Evans was actually originally supposed to play the sheriff, but he couldn't due to some other, I don't know, project. And so he was like, hey, just call Sebastian Stan, he'll do it.
So in lieu of Captain America, we got the Winter Soldier. It's really not a bad trade-off.
No, Sebastian Stan does a great job.
Both great actors.
He looks kind of chubby in this film, dude. Was that on purpose?
I think it might have been. I think it's so that he's not like, I'm a big buff guy. No, you're supposed to look realistic in the 60s.
Yeah, he didn't look like fat or anything. Like, he put on like 50 pounds for the role.
But he's not chiseled like Hugh Jackman was in the Wolverine,
He definitely looks like, I don't know if it was fake or if he like ate pizzas for a few days. Like, he looks like, not in a bad way. I'm not trying to be mean or anything.
Just like, imagine the meeting. It's like, what do I need to do to prepare? You should probably go to Steak and Shake and get yourself like 3 or 4 shakes and just kind of eat them all. Well, and then we'll film.
They live in California, so I'm pretty sure it's In-N-Out.
Yeah.
What would you rate the movie?
2.5.
Really?
No, it was well done. It did absolutely drag.
I would give it also a 3. Where I felt Antebellum gave away too much story and didn't have enough, this definitely had too much story and hid things really well. But I think both had solid actors and solid premises.
Oh, no. The cast is great, and I really did enjoy, like, the world building.
Cast 5.
No, the world was good. I really do felt like they could have skipped a lot of stuff and still told the same story.
All right, so let's talk about a more fun movie.
The best Halloween movie ever.
It's super fun. I know it looks dorky, so...
Because it was.
But don't add us. So it's Hubie Halloween.
With Adam Sandler. A Babadoo Boo.
Adam Sandler's character in this, though it seems like it's going to just be like so dumb.
It's just a goofy, spoofy horror movie.
But it's actually really well written, and there was, like, a decent amount of mystery to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good.
It was a very solid Halloween comedy that 2020 needed so bad, because things have been bleak. Things have been rough. Nobody's having a good time. And so it's like, you know what we need to see? Adam Sandler just get, like, pelted with things.
And of course he brought his friends, you know, Kevin James and Rob Schneider and Steve Buscemi. Mm-hmm. They all came along.
Tim Meadows is in it. Maya Rudolph is in it. Fucking Shaq is in it. Like, there are so many people.
Ray Liotta makes a pit stop in it.
Yeah, there's just a lot of really fun things happening. And there's also a few references to his earlier films, like Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, and I'm sure there's a couple others. This wasn't just an Adam Sandler fun tour de force made for TV type movie.
Did you know, another fun fact, because I love him,
mm-hmm.
Cameron Boyce, who the movie was dedicated to, was actually going to star in this movie as one of the kids, but obviously he passed away before they filmed the movie.
Bummer.
Yeah, that's kind of sad.
Hold up. Did you say fun fact, child death? Is that the fucking, is that what we're trying to go for now? That's what's considered fun in 2020?
Fun is a loose term. Why are you looking at me like that?
You can't have funeral without fun. So, Hubie Halloween. It's all about Hubie Dubois. And he is an adult. He's not very smart, right? He's still kind of I feel like he's kind of like a Happy Gilmore type character. He's not mentally handicapped, but he sure as hell isn't, like, college educated.
He's super sweet,
though. Yeah, really nice guy. He has a special thermos.
The thermos is the best thing.
He has a special thermos that he built, and he takes it everywhere he goes. But it's kind of like a Swiss Army knife that's, like, absolutely ridiculous. So throughout the movie, he's always using it for normal things. Sometimes it's a flashlight, sometimes it's a grappling hook. I think at one point he also turns it into, like, an umbrella.
It's everything. It holds soup, but other stuff, too.
It's like the Inspector Gadget device, and because it's kind of a goofy movie, they're just like,
it's fine.
We'll just switch them out, and we'll have 100 different prop thermoses that do different things, which is really fun. He goes around and he loves Halloween. They live in Salem, Massachusetts. And he loves Halloween, and he lives with his mom, who is somewhat clueless most of the time.
Or so she seems. Mm-hmm.
But the town hates Hubie.
We don't know why.
I think it's just because he's dorky. Like, they just go around and he's just a laughingstock because he's never really done anything big with his life. And he's kind of like Chicken Little, always running around like, things are going wrong, the sky is falling, kids are breaking down mailboxes, and I saw something suspicious over by old man Wilker's house, and
Hubie
blah, blah.
Hubie calls the police a lot.
And that's who Kevin James' character is. He's kind of like the deputy of the police force, and he's like, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll give you a special line. You can't contact us at all, but you have to find things that are suspicious on Halloween, and then put it in this special receptacle. It's really just like a trash can. They really don't take him seriously at all.
He's so nice. And, like, the only person that likes him is
Is the
Julia Bowen's character.
She's the mom from Modern Family.
Violet Valentine is her name in the movie.
Yeah, which is why it's like Vicky Valancourt from The Waterboy.
Yeah, you're right there.
It's like instead of Vicky Valancourt, it's
Violet Valentine.
Violet Valentine. I don't know. He must love those repeating V's.
He's just like Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Peter Parker.
It's like Bruce Banner. There's a plot going around on Halloween.
People are missing.
But it's specifically people who have been making fun of Hubie Dubois.
Hubie Doobie.
Hubie Doobie. And so they keep going missing, and there's like some strange creature, like a wolfman or something, going around and killing them.
Steve Buscemi?
Mm-hmm.
Is some kind of wolfy thing.
He moves in next to Hubie's house, and he says, you're probably going to hear, like, screaming and chains and things in my house on Halloween night. Just ignore that. I'll be fine. And he's, like, spending all day Halloween, like, boarding up his windows and shit. Weird stuff
he's
doing.
So, of course, Hubie thinks he's a werewolf killing people in the town.
Right, and so he goes and checks on him, and sure enough, he accidentally lets him out. So, now we know that Steve Buscemi, the werewolf, is running around. Also, there's word that a serial killer just broke out of the insane asylum nearby, but it's picking him off, and we won't give away the whole ending because it is so funny, and there is actually a really good twist in the end.
And I like how the ending related back to Salem, Massachusetts. So, I know this was, like, not that highly rated, but it was a really fun movie, so...
No, this was the most fun I had watching a strictly Halloween-type comedy movie since Ernest Scared Stupid. Now, you didn't like that movie.
Did I watch that movie?
Yeah, you watched it with me when we lived at your parents' house.
It wasn't good then.
It wasn't that good. But for me, growing up as a kid, watching Jim Varney and Ernest and doing the whole Halloween horror thing was so fun. And this gave me those feels only as an adult because I understood this Adam Sandler references. There were some legitimately, like, scary, funny scenes.
There was a really fun callback to some of his other films with
Ben Stiller.
That's his name.
And that was the Happy Gilmore reference. He was still the attendant of the nursing home that he was way back when, like 18 years ago, whenever that movie came out.
Yeah.
But also when he's riding his bike, people are throwing things. And at first, it starts small. It's like
vegetables and stuff.
Yeah, simple things. But progressively throughout the movie, the things that are getting thrown at him get more ridiculous.
Wasn't there like a toilet or something?
Yeah, there's like somebody like throws a microwave or a big screen TV. They are holding their bicycle at him. And meanwhile, he's just like ducking and dodging and diving.
The movie was really fun.
It was such a fun movie.
What would you rate it?
I'd rate it a 4 out of 5.
I agree.
I would
concur.
I would rate it higher, except it is goofy. It is silly, and it isn't like cinematic gold. It's just a super fun movie. If at all possible, I want to make it a holiday tradition to just watch Hubie Halloween the same way we would watch Hocus Pocus or Nightmare or any of the other Halloween classics that we like, because it is that much fun.
The next movie on our list is a little more scary, and it is a movie we saw in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Empty Man.
Yeah, and it's actually based on a comic that came out. It was a limited thing.
Going into this movie, I thought it was going to be a straightforward monster movie, right? Like, The Empty Man looked like The Bye Bye Man, only better.
It starts out with these four people and they're kind of going into the Himalayas and somewhere...
A mountain range.
Yeah. And they're hiking to the top of this mountain range in the middle of the winter. One of their friends actually falls down into a cavern, right? They go get him and he's like stuck inside this tomb, I guess, with this weird skeletal creature.
Weird.
It was so weird.
And he goes, "If you touch me, you'll all die." Mm-hmm. And he's like, the guy almost doesn't. And I'm like, dude, you should not. Like, he told you. He knew better and he did it anyway.
Right, because you don't leave your friend down there. It's just like...
I would.
It's like, it's weird and it's creepy, but at the same time, he's your friend. So they end up saving him, but the whole time you're thinking, oh, well, the bye-bye man. See, you got me talking. The empty man, he's like the possessed soul of this weird skeletal creature. But they pull him out, and over the next 3 days, they start losing their minds. And,
especially the one girl.
Mm-hmm, and, like, he goes out, the guy who fell, he walks to the edge of a bridge and, like, sits down, and he's just, like, staring into the abyss.
And they all come to find him, because they're about to hike out.
Because the one girl is going crazy. She ends up, like, murdering all three of them. Like, she murders her two friends and then just, like, jumps off of the edge next to the bridge.
I have to assume that he also killed himself because when we flash forward...
Right, no, okay. This is, like, 20 minutes worth of movie.
I mean, yeah, this movie was also suffered from being too long.
Mm-hmm. But this is, like, the first at least 20 minutes of the movie.
And then you finally see the empty man flash up on the screen, the title card.
And it never refers to that stuff ever again.
I think they were supposed to be relatives or something. I don't really know.
No, I think that was kind of the beginning of, like, where the whole
storyline
of the empty man goes.
That was more interesting than what followed.
Agreed. I thought that was a... if that was just a short story called The Empty Man, I'd be like, that was fucking good.
So that's the best part of the movie. Now let's dive into the rest of the movie, which follows a retired cop, or an ex-cop,
mm-hmm.
who now owns a gun store, and he is helping his friend, who apparently we find out he had an affair with.
Right.
He's helping her find her missing daughter.
Right. Apparently she's missing, and she wrote, "The empty man made me do it, on the mirror in blood, right? But she's nowhere to be found. He goes and investigates and finds out that she and a lot of her friends were on a bridge and they were telling the story of the empty man. If you find a bottle on a bridge at night,
you
blow into it and you think of the empty man, it'll come and kill you.
In 3 days.
Right, the first day you hear it, and the second day you see him, and the third day he come and go and get your ass.
The next part of the movie wasn't bad either.
Right, it kind of built up to this whole scary story kind of thing.
I mean, it wasn't, like, groundbreaking, but it was decent for a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
He basically ends up investigating, and the creepiest part of the movie... Well, there's two really creepy scenes. There's one where the empty man is, like, in his house.
That's terrifying.
And then there's one where he finds the kids, and I don't want to spoil it because it was genuinely creepy. He is still trying to find the daughter because she's the only one still missing.
Yeah, see, all the kids end up getting found after trying to call the empty man, except for the girl he's actually looking for, and it's like, well, shit, like, where is she?
That takes him down a rabbit hole of a cult.
They find a pamphlet in her room talking about this cult. It kind of plays off kind of like a Scientology, find your inner self and give us your money kind of thing. He goes and he breaks rules and protocols. He goes indoors he shouldn't. And he ends up diving in and finding that these people, they're starting to... Their whole mindset is that if enough people think it, you can bring it into the physical world.
Right.
A bridge between thought and matter.
Now, I will say, if you had taken these two movies and just, like, split them in half and made them two different movies, I think they both would have been more successful movies. Because I know it's based on a comic, and I don't know what the comic's like.
Neither do I.
But in my opinion, the scary story of the empty man coming to get you is more scary when it's separate. And then the cult story is also a decent story, but then you mix them together, making one long movie that is just utter nonsense.
Right, because the murder story, the empty man being the monster, really has nothing to do.
I mean, it does and it doesn't.
It does and it doesn't, because he goes and he finds the stuff out, what's happening with the cult, and he gets told by this mysterious guy who goes to some of the meeting, he's like, hey, go to this address, you might find out more. And he goes out into the middle of nowhere. It's kind of like a summer camp type place.
That was creepy.
And he finds a video, like a VHS tape, that's like experiment try number 13. And they go around this guy and they're doing this whole ritual. It ends up like killing them all.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, the host doesn't take. And in the middle of him watching it, like, it turns around and a teddy bear that was sitting there
is gone.
And so he leaves the cabin, and there's this whole cult going around a bonfire.
Oh god, that was
And then the bonfire just goes out, and they all just, like,
look up,
turn
at
to
him.
And it's just so fucking scary. And they chase him, and he gets in his car, and he's running him down. It's awful.
I think that was the most disappointing part for me, is that there were some genuinely scary moments.
Oh yeah, there were some real scares.
And then the ending is just such a letdown.
Right, because the plot itself...
is more confusing than Tenet. You're going to watch Tenet, and you're going to understand more than this plot of this movie.
Right, because by the end of Tenet, you understand what happened beforehand. By the end of this movie, you have more questions than you did. Yeah, it was scary. Yeah, I was entertained. But now I'm just like...
The last 15 minutes of the movie were garbage.
We had to Google it and still didn't get answers.
I still don't understand what happened.
It still had legitimate scares. It was still a fun movie. What would you rate it?
I would still only rate it a 2.5.
Yeah, I would agree. I liked the scares, but I just wish it'd been tied better. And can I just say, I hate it when things are based on a comic book and they suck.
Because that just is such a letdown.
Like, sometimes they're great and sometimes they're middle of the road.
Bro,
but
tell me about it.
Oh, yeah. Book adaptations?
Percy Jackson.
Speaking of Percy Jackson, we've been reading The Heroes of Olympus.
So good.
I love it. It's great.
Let's move on to the next movie on the list, which I think was probably my favorite movie that we watched this month.
Okay.
It's called Love and Monsters.
That's just because you like Dylan O'Brien.
Leave me alone. Dylan O'Brien is the best.
Wait, what? Who's the other one? McDermott.
Logan Lerman?
He was Percy Jackson.
Correct.
Okay.
Dylan O'Brien was in The Maze Runner.
The Maze Runner series. Okay, yeah.
Which also...
based on book. Dame Jasper.
I have one comment to say about it. It's not that it did a bad job at adapting the books. The books are just weird. Like, reading them, I'm like, oh, these are so good. And then I go back and read them, and I'm like, these are weird. Why did I like these? But unrelated.
Okay, so, Love and Monsters, there was this big nuclear thing, or, like, asteroids or something.
There was an asteroid coming, and they shot it out of the sky with nukes.
But all the pieces from the weapons actually fell to Earth and infected the land and turned all the animals into these big old beasties. And some are more mutated for abilities, while others just, like, grew to enormous proportions.
Now, it's worth noting, it pretty much only turned cold-blooded creatures. Cold-blooded is a loose term. Ectotherm is more accurate. They're
crustaceans, insects, small animals mostly.
Mostly, it was like amphibians, reptiles, and crustaceans. It's pretty much...
And insects.
Yes, and that's pretty much where you're sitting. So anything that's not a mammal or a bird, pretty much.
So Logan Lerman, his character... No, Dylan...
O'Brien.
Dylan O'Brien. I'm sorry.
So his character, Joel, is living in a bunker.
With a lot of people who've actually paired up. So he was separated from his family.
His parents are dead.
No, his parents are dead, but the one girl that he was in love with, actually he got separated from her. So he's been living for like 7 years in this bunker with all these people who he's grown together as a family, but they've all paired off except him. He's like the perpetual fifth wheel.
It sucks for him. Yeah,
and he's just like, geez, I just wish I had my girlfriend.
He ends up building this radio and finds her in a colony across the way. And it's not even that far. I think it's like
93 miles.
But
because there's no like vehicles and stuff anymore, it's still going to be like a 7 day trek to go, even if he's going like 10 or 15 miles a day.
And there's monsters everywhere. And Joel freezes up every time he sees a monster. He tries so bad to help. And
he's like, I'm going to be a hero. And then like he practically pisses his pants every time something comes to get him.
So he travels through the suburbs, picking up a dog helper along the way.
Yeah.
Which is really sweet. The dog is really cool. The dog's name is Boy.
And he actually finds a couple of other...
survivors.
They're kind of nomads. They walk around doing things. The main guy is played by Michael Rooker. Yay! We love him from Walking Dead and Guardians.
Little girl is played by Ariana Greenblatt.
Mm-hmm. I don't know much about her.
She's been in other things.
I know, but she's not a big name like Michael Rooker is. They realize that Joel is bad at pretty much everything, and he is going to die out here on his own. So they spend, you know, a few days. This is how you shoot. This is how you hunt. This is
how you kill monsters.
This is the type of plant that's dangerous. This is what you do if something's trying to chase you. Real life-saving skills for the wilderness.
I think that little girl played young Gamora. But she was also in One and Only Ivan.
Yeah, she has been in things that we've actually seen recently. He goes, and there's a lot of really big, scary monsters, right? There's a big, giant boulder snail.
And a frog thing.
A toad that, like, spits acid or something.
There's all kinds of creatures. Big,
and they're all...
A giant ant.
Yeah, they're all giant. They're all, like, you know, big as elephants or, you know, just terrifying stuff. And they have Joel's scent.
And they're tracking
the frog, right?
Right.
The frog has Joel's scent, and so it's chasing him all over creation. He's kicking through, and he makes contact with this girl again midway through. She's like, hey, there's this guy, and he has a yacht, and he's going to save us, and they have a settlement, and it's great. If you're on your way...
Come here.
Come here, and we'll go together. They didn't expect him to survive, right? Everyone's expecting Joel to die.
No, they
he's
all
useless.
Said goodbye.
Right, they said their final goodbyes because he is not going to survive being as, you know, fidgety as he is, right? He freezes up.
This movie was fairly funny. There's decent funny moments, but it was also a really great adventure movie. And the monsters are solid. Like, the designs, I think, are really cool. Mm-hmm. I think this movie was really good.
It had a lot of heart. The effects were not bad.
I think they were really good.
They were definitely good movie quality. You know, because, like, sci-fi. Okay, you watch a sci-fi movie.
Oh, we just watched one.
Yeah, you can see where the budget is and how they're like, oh, yeah, that definitely looks like a ghost shark. You know, Lavalantula. Clearly, you can tell what it's supposed to be, but it lacks finesse. This movie didn't have that problem.
I would say this is one of my favorite movies that I've watched in a while. Like, new release movies.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I hope they make another one.
I mean, I would watch another one, for sure.
I appreciated that they didn't kill off Michael Rooker.
No, and in the end, like, we won't give anything away. Still work out.
It's really all about finding strength and family in the middle of an apocalypse.
And, you know, trusting in yourself, too. It's like, you can lean on others as much as you can, but really you have to have confidence and faith in yourself if you're going to accomplish anything.
And it's basically the messages, Joel's messages, if I can survive out here, anyone can.
Right.
Because he's just not good at
things.
Just
make sure you get the help from a dog, some nomads, a fucking boulder snail, and a robot that has like 90 minutes of battery left.
That was really sweet. There's this little, like, He has a robot girlfriend, kind of, at the beginning at the bunker.
Right, but she's completely
dead,
out of battery.
There's no electricity anywhere, I don't think. Not really.
Not there, anyway.
Not much.
Yeah, they have enough for, like, the radio.
He meets another robot, and that was so sweet. I did tear up a little bit about the robot scene. And there were some really genuinely beautiful moments in this. Like, mm-hmm. not just, like, emotionally, like, actually beautiful. Like, there were some monster designs that were incredible. The jellyfish. They were, like,
wow.
Sky jellies.
Sky jellies were so pretty. And she was like, don't worry. They don't hurt. Well, that's good to know. Everything else wants to fucking kill me.
Right?
It's nice to know that these big, giant jellyfish, who should, in theory, be totally, like, murder machines.
Right, because that's what jellyfish are kind
they're
of in this
like,
ocean.
They're just, like, floating, like, Aurora Borealis. They're just...
So beautiful.
So pretty.
I wouldn't risk touching them, though.
Hell no. Better to see, not touch. The movie was solid. I would probably give it a 3.5, 4.
I would give it a 4.5. I liked
it
a lot.
It was really good, and I would watch another.
Dylan is always a fantastic actor.
You just love him after Teen Wolf.
I've seen him in other things, and I think he's a really good actor.
Okay, side note. I understand that Hubie Halloween had, like, kind of a werewolf thing going on, and you've been watching now 5 seasons of Teen Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that in the upcoming podcast, I'm taking the werewolf side?
I genuinely like vampires. It's a typical rule better.
You,
what?
You just watched Teen Wolf. Well, I guess you watched all of Vampire Diaries, too.
Yeah.
Doesn't Vampire Diaries have a werewolf, too?
Yeah. There's,
Jesus.
There's other characters I actually like.
There's witches, too.
The other characters a little bit better than the werewolf characters. They're more interesting. Like the Banshee and the Kitsune. Like.
Oh, yeah. I saw one of the ones with the Banshee in it.
Yeah, they're more interesting.
Okay, sorry about that side note. I just kind of wanted to throw in the fact that we have some fun things planned for the month of November.
All right. So the next movie on our list is not a new movie, but it's a movie we wanted to watch anyway.
Oh, God.
It's a little movie called Snakes on a Plane.
It's kind of an indie thing. You may not have heard of it.
What do you have to say? I mean, this movie...
You had already seen it.
Okay.
And I was watching it for the very first time.
The basic plot of this movie is a guy sees the Yakuza, I think it's the Yakuza, or a Yakuza equivalent, murder this like district attorney.
Because they were about to prosecute him for some other murders.
He is held in witness protection because they're trying to kill him.
Mm-hmm. And Samuel Jackson is like, I'm the guy who's going to save your life. If you want to testify against him, we have to fly from Australia.
No.
They're
in Hawaii.
Hawaii, okay. We have to fly from Hawaii over to L.A. so that we can testify in court. And that's the only way we can keep you safe.
Right. And it's only like a 5-hour flight.
What the Yakuza do is because they're trying to make sure that no one is aboard. Because it's all very, like, secure.
Right. They check the plane. They check all this stuff.
They end up smuggling these giant crates full of venomous snakes onto the plane. And they're all kind of like in a ball in this crate, and it's on a timer set for 2.5 hours.
That way it's exactly
the exact
in the
midpoint of the flight. So turning around would not make any sense, and it wouldn't even save them any time. The first half of the plane flight is very uneventful, except that Sam Jackson and the other main character, who is he?
Sean Nathan Phillips.
Okay, random white guy. They actually have to commandeer all of first class for some fucking reason. Okay, maybe probably for his safety.
Safety.
Right. But it's this big, giant lounge. Like, okay, I...
There's stairs to it.
I have been on a plane to Japan, which is further than Hawaii. It was a very large, very packed plane, and first class was nice, but it sure didn't have a sky deck. It's a plane, but apparently this plane is, like, top-level shit. The people who are supposed to be in first class, like, there's, you know, a rich lady and a rapper and a businessman, right? They all got pushed to coach. And even though this flight is only, like, half full, they're still all bitching about it. Like, I'm sorry. Every single seat has fucking elbow room. Quit complaining. Just sit in your seat. Suck it up. But it's kind of building up these characters. You know, 2.5 hours in, the timer goes off. Snakes go out. Apparently, when they got on the plane leaving Hawaii, they were given these leis that had
pheromones
laced into them to make the snakes want to eat your face off. Cool.
Because this is the thing. If you watch this movie, you have to be like, science? Nah.
Fuck you, science.
Assuming that you don't believe in science in this movie,
mm-hmm.
and that the pheromones are literally going to make the snakes bite everyone for no reason, not try to eat them, nothing.
Yeah, just bite everyone.
Just enjoy all the different snake bites. And the snakes in this, some of them realistic looking, some of them,
nah.
No.
But the snakes go out, and there's a few deaths. Like there's a fun little there's a mile high bathroom scene.
There's that guy peeing in the toilet.
And it, like, latches onto his dang dong.
My dick fell off.
Mm-hmm. And there's a fat lady who's asleep, and it, like, crawls up her blouse and just, like, bites her on the neck like a vampire.
It's, like, in her bosom, and she's, like, having a dream, like, ha-ha-ha. Like, girl.
It tickles. It's like,
girl, there's a snake in there.
It ain't fun. It is death.
Another trigger warning. There is a dog death in this.
Yeah.
Sad. I mean, that's the whole plot of the movie.
And even with everything going on, they're still like, you can't come up to first class. Like, bitch, we're dying down here. No, we gotta keep it safe. So Samuel Jackson says his iconic line.
I'm tired of these motherfucking stakes on this motherfucking plane.
I see why. But the whole thing is really convoluted, really dorky, and it's just an excuse to be like, nope, snakes, plane, death. Fun.
Samuel L. Jackson loved this movie.
Yeah, no. I think in an interview he said, like, it's the most fun that I've had. I read the script and I'm like, oh my god, I have to be in this movie.
They tried to change the title and he was like, no, I'm not going to be in it if you change the title.
Snakes on a Plane is perfect.
He gets, like, people, you know, give him a lot of crap for this movie, but he's like, if you don't like this movie, you can fuck off because I love this movie. I mean, I like this movie. I think... Obviously, it's not, like, his best work or anything.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really fun time.
Here's what I have to say.
Okay. I'm ready.
It was dorky. The plot was thin. The characters were pretty forgettable. But this was a super fun watch. It is very mid-2000s. It kind of focuses on, you know, new CGI effects actually getting good.
I mean, they're decent.
And there's definitely quite a bit of modern music in it. You know, new rap and things like that.
There is really funny. There's a rapper and Kenan Thompson is like...
His hype man?
Yeah, one of them. And then the other bodyguard gets bit on his booty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really
funny. No, but Kenan, they're like, oh my god, the pilot, he's dead. Can anyone save us? And he's like, I've logged 7,000 hours. And turns out it's just on like his video game. And it's 2006. So it's
it's a PS2.
It's a PS2. And he's like, yeah, I've logged a lot. It's very realistic. He's like, oh, shit. And he ends up, like, saving them all based on PS2 flight training.
I guarantee you that...
That's almost the most unbelievable part of this whole fucking movie.
The PS2 people were like...
Yes.
I can't believe they put this in the movie. This is the best. I just think that's really funny.
It was. But it was a fun movie. It was enjoyable. I'd probably give it a 3. It's just a movie to watch.
Maybe even a 3.5 for the breast-biting scene.
And the business guy who was such a prick, so glad he died.
He deserved what he got.
He did, absolutely. The last movie that we're going to talk about was the one that just came out. It is an actual horror movie. It's not like horror comedy or anything. It's called Come Play. Even though the movie title is a bit misleading, it is still fun. It's a story about an autistic boy who they caught a little bit later, so they didn't start his speech therapy until a little bit later in life. And in order to communicate, he actually has a phone app on his mom's tablet.
On his phone.
He has a phone, but not for long. He has a phone, and there's an app there that lets you tap on symbols and words so that you can effectively speak without speaking.
It looked very confusing to me.
But I suppose if you know where the icons are, you can navigate.
You know those TikToks with the dog where it speaks? It's like a human equivalent of that.
Yeah, and there's
like a way more advanced.
Right, there's like 100 buttons or something, and so it's like, you know, talk to... me.
Talk to me.
Talk to me.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's things like that. And his classmates, they make fun of him. He's awkward. He doesn't really have a lot of friends.
Well, hey.
They bully him.
You actually find out that there was an incident with him and his actual friend where his mom decided it was better if they weren't friends.
Right, because the main character, his name is Oliver, by the way. Mm-hmm. Oliver, he's having a fit and he ends up punching his friend. Because of that, the mom, who's played by Gillian Jacobs, who was on a Community, she's like, he really hates your son, and he doesn't want to play anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's better if your son and my son aren't friends anymore. And because of that, Oliver now is pretty much alone, and the friend that he used to have has banded up with his other buddies to bully him. I forget what spawns him getting the story.
The app, it just pops up on his phone.
Yeah, it just pops up on his phone. And it's Misunderstood Monsters. And he opens it up. And it says, this is Larry. He's misunderstood. He lives in the shadows.
And there's a whole little story.
Right, and there's a whole little storybook that can only be pulled up on your phone. You know, early on, the kids are bullying Oliver, and they end up throwing his phone in a field. A couple days later, his dad, who's a night security guard at a parking lot attendant, and the lost and found, there's kind of a tablet. It's slightly broken, but it works. Mm-hmm. And so they gift it to the son, and when the misunderstood monster story pops up on it, they assume that it's kind of like a haunted tablet. It goes like a lot of horror movies go, where they're like, oh, it's in his head, blah, blah. But really quickly, they start to believe.
At least the mom.
Yeah, the mom is like, Larry's fucking real, because after the sleepover, where, you know, his friend got absolutely traumatized by Larry, she goes and tries to change all the light bulbs out. Larry actually installs the light bulbs for her when her back is turned.
Because Larry uses electricity and stuff like that to travel through.
Yeah, you can see it when, like, as he's moving, car alarms are going off, lights are flickering in and out, sound systems are, you know, fluctuating. Right. As it progresses, you find out that Larry just wants a friend.
But Larry's scary.
And Larry...
Scary Larry.
And Larry lives in monitors and screens. So we're talking TVs, tablets, cell phones, computers, anything with a screen, that's where he lives. Because when people are lonely, what do?
They turn to their screens.
They're on their phones, they binge watch things, they become internet addicts.
I think this movie was just an allegory for how much time we spend on our phones.
Yeah, and I think that's the main point. Now, granted, this kid has a real need for it. Right. But it's true. Like, one of the main things in the story is he's obsessed with SpongeBob. Loves SpongeBob. And so sometimes he even communicates through, like, SpongeBob clips.
Mm-hmm.
Larry is trying to get on Oliver's level by, like, you know, giving him a sponge or pulling up SpongeBob for him. And we really quickly find out that Larry wants to crawl out of his fucking computer screen.
And take Oliver back.
And take Oliver as a friend and turn him into a monster just like Larry. His mom tries to help him, and there's this really, a lot of scary shit that happens. And I won't ruin the end, but good God, this movie terrified me.
I love that this movie had all these different characters that were so fleshed out. Like, yes, we've seen where kids get bullied at school and stuff before, but, like, the one kid had a legitimate reason for being a bully. He was so hurt that he thought he didn't want to be his friend anymore. And I just think that they fleshed out all the characters really well. Thought this was really good. It was genuinely super scary.
Larry himself, the creature, he is kind of like Slenderman.
Mm.
He's very elongated, and like the way he stands is kind of ape-like because his arms are slightly longer than his legs, which are already really long. So you take a Sharpie and a piece of paper and you scribble out just the roughest, biggest stick figure you can on the screen or on the paper. And that's what Larry looks like. He's just very angular and very thick, but sticky.
This movie was actually based on a little short film called Larry.
But Larry is absolutely terrifying because you can only see him through a phone. So even though he kind of exists in the real world, he doesn't. But if you hold your phone camera up, you can see where he's at.
It's so creepy.
It is so creepy the way they
illustrate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they convey it in a way that would make me terrified. I was truly scared. This is probably one of the scaredest I've been coming out of a movie theater in a while.
Just say, we glad we don't have children.
Mm-hmm. And even though I'm always on my phone, I know I have friends. But I'm also not like a fucking nine-year-old. Very scary stuff.
Very scary Larry.
Very scary Larry. How would you rate it?
3.5.
Yeah, I'd give it a 3.5 or a 4. It was very well executed, and I kind of had a little bit of a, you know, heart palpitation during this movie.
I jumped a few times.
Oh, yeah. It gets you real good. What movie had the best individual scares, right? We know that Hubie Halloween had some goofy ones. Empty Man had some good scares. Snakes did. And Come Play did.
I'll tell you, the Empty Man had a scare that genuinely haunted me a little bit. Because it had this, like, you think, oh, is that a pile of clothing? And then it's the monster.
Oh.
And that's, like, something real that you live with, you know, at night. Like, you go to sleep and you're like, what is that? And it's just, like, your bathrobe or something.
Yeah.
But I think that Come Play had the best overall scares.
I have to agree. Like, Empty Man had some good scares. And honestly, like, Hubie Halloween did have, like, the scarecrow scene. I know it's played up for laughs, and it's a comedy. Still, legitimately...
Legitimately
fun scares. So,
coming up. Next week, we're going to have our Vampires versus Werewolves out.
Yep.
And then, after that, we're going to have a B-horror movie theme out.
Right. So, the basic premise of Vampires versus Werewolves is we're going to research. We're going to talk about which one is better, which one we prefer, which one has the better movie slate, and kind of the contrast and compare idea for the two monsters. And then for the B horror film, we're just going to watch some old films that weren't rated very well on Rotten Tomatoes and kind of like those old culty, terrible movies. We already saw a couple of them. We saw Bigfoot on Sci-Fi. We saw Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Hmm. We're going to watch like three or four more just to kind of get a better idea. But
now, full disclosure,
this is gonna suck.
Killer Clowns has a higher rating than we technically were going for, but we're including it anyway because it's our podcast and you can't tell us what to do.
No, and it has a cult following. There are people who legitimately like the movie. But it's going to be kind of... It's going to be hard to watch. I feel like they're going to be bad movies and we're going to be like, ugh, this is going to suck. But I hope it goes well. And then moving forward, we're going to have our stream mini for the month of November. And then we're going to have the episode going over the movies we saw in the month of November.
Which hopefully isn't too thin.
Right, but we're going to put that out probably the first or second week in December. And then that's it. No themed, no anything else in the month of December and through the month of January.
We need a break for the holidays.
And that will give us time to prep for season 3, enjoy the holidays, prepare for the new year, and then give you some exciting new and different content for season 3 of Real Romance. Social media. Follow us on Real Romance UCPN on Twitter. We also have at Real Romance on TikTok and Instagram. If you want to follow our personals, Brittany is at BookNerd528 on Instagram. I'm at BamfingBob on Twitter.
And then shoot us an email at RealRomancePod@gmail.com.
If you want to follow our parent company, so to speak, it's at Undercover Capes on Twitter. And you can follow them all over the internet. They have a lot of great stuff that I highly recommend. And overall, review, rate, subscribe, anything that you can do to make sure that you're up to date on what we put out and how regular, please do that. Reach out to us. Let us know what we're doing, whether you like it, dislike it, neutral on it. Just more feedback makes for a better podcast. Would you agree?
Agreed.
I'm Robert. This has been Brittany. Until next time, keep it real. Is it sticking yet?
I have no idea. Nobody's contacted us.
Okay, so for me, it sticks. Keep it real.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Real Romance Podcast, courtesy of the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, and share with your friends.